When the stock market had its historic crash 89 years ago today, the wild gyrations on Wall Street seemed far away from the farmers of the prairie. They were making money and putting it in local banks where they thought it was safe. But in a wave, the financial failures on Wall Street eventually made their way to the West. Banks failed, farms failed, and the Great Plains became the Dust Bowl.
I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues.
Timothy Egan writes the Outposts column for the New York Times, and he won the 2006 National Book Award for his history of the Dust Bowl called The Worst Hard Time. He spoke with us about the echoes of the stock market crash of then and now from the studios of KUOW in Seattle. Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, John.
You know, in your book, The Worst Hard Time, the beginning of the story actually has an eerie kind of echo for what's going on today, and that is that the farmers out in the Dust Bowl region, what became the Dust Bowl region, when they looked back at the headlines in New York about the financial crash, really felt as though there was no way that was going to affect them. And what they learned over the subsequent years after 1929 was that they were very, very wrong. Tell that story, will you?
Yeah, and there's a fascinating parallel to today. You hear some of the same complaints out west where I live, the same echoes from that time almost 80 years ago. Well, here's what happened. The 20s was this great gaudy era, as you know, when there was a 600% run-up in the stock market, and all these commodities out west, mainly wheat, dryland wheat, just went crazy. They doubled and tripled and quadrupled. And, you know, these folks, Wall Street crash, you know, late October 1929, we're in that anniversary right now of it. It went down on 2 days during the week, 11% one day, something like 12% the next. And at the end of the crash, it was a series of crashes, actually. The net result was Wall Street went down 40%. And folks said, well, this can't touch me in large measure because only 2% of all Americans owned any stock then. And now the figure is closer to 50%.
And at the time, the farmers would say, we're dealing with land, something that's real, and wheat. People eat wheat. So, of course, it's real. It's not like paper money.
Exactly. They thought, you know, this stuff was air. This stuff was vapor in New York. And they sort of had this, I don't want to say arrogant, but they had this somewhat smug attitude that they were getting their biblical comeuppance, those Wall Street swells and all those gin swilling city slickers who'd bet on paper, and here they owned something that was intangible. And the U.S. government had come out and said the soil is the one immutable thing that can never be lost. And so they had wheat, the staff of life, for God's sakes. So they didn't think this could ever touch them. But the reason it did was because once the commodities went up, it also went down. But more importantly, all these regional banks, we had thousands and thousands of regional banks which were chartered during the 1920s. These banks were unregulated. There was no FDIC. They were gambling in the stock market. So when Wall Street crashed, it took all the people's savings, all this money that people locked into these regional banks. And so you had just this panic, one after the other, banks closing in these little Norman Rockwell-like small towns. They would just close without notice, button up their doors, and people would come banging on them and say, where's my money? And they'd say, it's gone. What do you mean it's gone? They'd say, well, we bet it on the stock market. And they didn't have ratios, you know, 10-to-1 ratios of having to keep their cash on hand. So this contagion quickly spread from something that should have been pretty isolated. In other words, again, only 2% of Americans own stock, to something that had touched the most basic and elemental of all things, wheat and land and dirt.
And on a scale that's much different, much smaller than we see today, nevertheless, it's the same lesson. People discover how interconnected the economy is and how money really works.
It's eerie, John, how similar it is to today. It's just because, you know, you think one small thing I was in Montana last week, and people were coming up to me in just the course of giving a couple talks and doing interviews and saying, I still don't understand this. I live out here in Montana, and I own my little business, or I have a ranch, or I have this piece of dirt. How could this thing be dragging me down? And it's the exact same parallel, the interconnectedness of it. And then the other story, of course, is the lack of regulation.
So, Tim, are you saying that we've learned nothing?
No, we learned something because we did create FDIC. Roosevelt, when he took office he was elected in 32, when he took office in 1933, the very first thing he did was close the banks for 5 days. There was a bank holiday, as they called it, kind of a weird euphemism for closing the banks. And he was petrified because these run-on banks were still going on. And up to a third of all banks had already closed. And when the banks reopened, Roosevelt said, the government will back everybody's savings. They essentially created it. But he was BSing. He said later, sure, we saved capitalism, but if there had been a run, if people hadn't been confident, we never did have the money to support it. We were just saying we're putting the faith in credit. It was amazing to see these interviews later with him, because he did say, well, we pulled it off, and it was sort of a head fake.
Makes you want to ask Hank Paulson a few questions. Uh-huh,
yeah,
Tim?
No, exactly. So, I mean, the lesson, you know, Hoover didn't act for 3 years. He let the banks fail. So the lesson now is that Federal Reserve, the financial system, has acted very quickly. Whether this will save it or not, of course, no one knows. You look at what the market's done since the bailout, and it's tanked.
Right.
One more figure, which is fascinating. Remember I told you the 40%? The great 1929 crash, the net result of that was 40% decline in the market value at the end of it. You know what the market's gone down this year, 2008, the S&P?
50.
It's very close to 40. It was 37 as of Monday morning before the 200-point loss. That's very, very similar.
Eerie. Finally, your book, The Worst Hard Time, tells a story of ultimately what was an environmental disaster, that reckless, greedy decisions on the part of a lot of Americans in a particular region of the United States caused soil erosion and an environmental catastrophe that was really something not really seen in the industrial era. Certainly, there's the same kind of commodity spike and crash going on with other kinds of things, like oil and coal. Do you see an environmental echo from those days?
I'll tell you where I see a little bit of that. It's in the run-up to ethanol, because you saw this huge competition for the same source, for both food and fuel. And so a lot of land that had been in soil conservation, this conservation reserve program which the government has, was taken out of it in this rush to do ethanol, because the government's subsidizing it and setting these goals. The other thing is there's this depletion of this huge amount of water that underlies the Great Plains, and you see people using that right now. But I'm glad you brought this up, because the Dust Bowl was directly related to a commodities crash. It wasn't nature in any respect, any way, shape, or form. It was the soil had been stripped away, but because they couldn't sell the wheat, the land then blew. And so, again, the one thing I sort of see is ethanol. Now, what happens if oil continues to crash? I mean, what if it gets back down to $20 a barrel? All this rush to ethanol, all this corn that was planted in the last 2 years to meet this, you could see something similar happening there.
Hmm. Well, Tim Egan, thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Timothy Egan writes the Outpost column for the New York Times. He also won the 2006 National Book Award for his History of the People Who Lived Through the Dust Bowl in the 1930s, The Worst Hard Time. Can't even see the sky.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.